Our next case on the docket is N. Ray WSOU Investments LLC, appeal number 25-1153. Mr. Gregory, you can proceed when you're ready.
May it please the court, the board reversed every rejection the examiner made. It then wrote its own obviousness rejection that no one had briefed and supported it with a single sentence of reasoning at Appendix 13. The board never explained why a skilled artisan would take a non-unique peer name out of Traversat's discovery protocol and use it as the basis for establishing a pipe. A mechanism, Traversat says, is keyed to a required unique pipe identifier at Appendix 670. The director now supplies that missing explanation for the first time in his response brief. The chain running from peer advertisement to embedded pipe advertisement to pipe identifier. Appellee brief at 27 and 28.
To be clear, I mean, I just want to make sure I understand. It's undisputed, right, that the statute allows the board to enter a new ground of rejection?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Okay.
They may raise a new ground of rejection, but it must be substantiated. It must have articulated
you're
reasoning.
You're challenging the merits of it.
Absolutely.
As well as procedure.
Absolutely.
Okay.
That chain appears nowhere in the board's decision. Under In Re Google, it cannot sustain the decision. We ask the court to reverse. If the court would rather the board apply the correct construction in the first instance, we ask it to vacate and to make clear that WSOU gets to answer any new theory before the board acts on it. The briefs raise five issues. Two of them decide this appeal: the board's construction of the establishment limitation, and the absence of any articulated reasoning for its new ground in rejection. And I will take those two issues together. The remaining three, burden shifting, teaching away, and the refusal to reopen prosecution, I will reach as time and the court's questions allow. Issues one and two are one event seen from two different angles. At Appendix 6, the board recited a construction. The service name that is the basis for establishing the connection is the same name sent in the request. At Appendix 14 and Appendix 15, it applied a different one, under which a name that has merely been sent in a request has already supported establishment. And it never said it was changing anything. I take the two issues together because they are the same two pages of the same decision. Issue one is claim construction, reviewed de novo on the intrinsic record. Wasika 853 F3rd at 1278. We are not asking the court to adopt a new construction. The construction the board recited at Appendix 6, the one the IPR panel gave at Appendix 970, is correct, and we do not ask the court to replace it. The error is what the board did with it. Under the board's reading, the establishment limitation collapses into the request limitation. No construction that gives the establishment limitation any independent work to do permits that collapse, which is why we do not need to offer one. We are not asking the court to say what service name means. We are seeking it to hold what the board's reading cannot mean, because that reading turns the establishment limitation into surplusage.
So to be clear, what is your construction of establishment based on a service name?
It is the construction that the IPR panel originally articulated and that this board adopted.
So you say it's at A6, for instance. Can you just show me specifically so I know exactly what your construction is?
Yeah, at Appendix 6, the service name used as a basis to support establishment is the same name sent in the request. So if we look at the claim, there are three limitations. There is a request sent, a response received, and providing antecedent basis. In an earlier limitation, there is what we refer to as the establishment limitation, where a service name is used to support the connection. And a service name is the same as the service name recited in both the request and the response limitations subsequently.
And is your argument that there's not substantial evidence for the board's conclusion that Traversat renders the claim obvious under that construction, or is it just that whether or not there's substantial evidence, the board didn't explain itself well enough?
So it's two, there are two arguments. One is claim construction. The board adopted the IPR board's construction, but then effectively gutted that instruction, that construction.
But is that a claim construction or is that a substantial evidence question?
That is a claim construction because the board articulated, the board states that the broader establishment limitation effectively doesn't need to do anything to support establishment. The board effectively said, all you have to do is find the name in order to support establishment. So they collapsed finding into establishment. And
what language are you relying on specifically? I mean, I understand, you know, that you agree that the board identified the correct construction on A6, but where exactly later in the opinion does it show to you, other than by your understanding of what the prior art teaches, that the board changed the construction?
Absolutely. At Appendix 14, it held that a name used as a basis to support establishment does not necessarily have to be used to actually establish that connection. And at Appendix 15, it said, what is enough instead? The peer's name is used to find the peer, a key initial step in establishing a connection. Finding became establishing. The board did not disagree with the antecedent basis premise.
14 and A15.
Yeah, Appendix 14 and 15. And it's important to note there's a footnote where the board referred to the IPR panel's comment that it didn't need to reach that question. And that footnote is really an articulation that the board was actually construing something without saying that it construed anything. So again, just to drill down on that claim construction. So claim one uses one service name three times by antecedent basis. The same name the layer sends in its request, receives in its response, and is configured to use to support establishing the connection. Figure three lays out that sequence, the request at step 310, the response at 320, and a separate establishment interaction at step 330, which is appendix 35. The establishment limitation is recited first only because it carries the antecedent, a service name, that the request and response limitations refer back to as the service name at appendix 47. Grammatically, establishment comes first. Operationally, however, it comes last. The board's key initial step reasoning reads the grammatical order as a temporal one, as if antecedent meant priority. It does not, and the specification proves it. The connection identifier the establishment limitation requires does not exist at the endpoint until the response arrives at appendix 43. The board's reading has the endpoint establishing a connection with information it does not yet have. And the claim does not say the layer establishes the connection. It says the layer is configured to support establishment based on that name. That is a capability limitation, not an act, and it is the phrase the board leaned on at appendix 14 to say the name need not actually establish anything. If sending the request is all that support establishment requires, then the request limitation and the establishment limitation are one limitation recited twice. And the director should tell the court what the word support adds. Separately recited limitations are presumed to mean different things. Becton Dickinson. It's also important to note, three sentences from the board's own decision are the whole case. At appendix 6, the board recited a construction requiring that the same service name used in this request also serve as the basis for establishment. At appendix 14, it held that a name used as a basis to support establishment does not necessarily have to be used to actually establish that connection.
Can I ask you something? It's really, it seems to me that it's the word basis that they're focused on, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes. And it's important to note, so here's a key.
Is your view that they broadly, like in a micro construction, a construction of the construction, the board erred in its construction of used as a basis?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Absolutely. And a key analogy there, if we need to make a phone call, we might know somebody's name. We go to a directory. We look up that person's name in order to find their phone number. But it is the phone number that we actually dial to establish that phone call. If only knowing the name is sufficient to establish the phone call, we've effectively adopted every networking protocol that exists today as reciting that limitation. And it's just not an appropriate, within the context of the specification, they never cite to anything in the specification, they never refer to anything in the prosecution history. The only thing they refer to is the word support.
But you would agree that the phone call in your scenario is based on the name, correct?
It is based on the name, but it's not, it's like if I need to find a room in a building, it's not sufficient to know what building I'm going to. I actually need to get to the room itself in order to enter that room.
I think, what about the breadth of the language itself?
Again, broadest reasonable interpretation has to have some basis in the specification and the claims itself. We can't pull a meaning out of thin air and call it broadest. But also, we're referring to the act itself. And the issue is, the specification makes clear that supporting the establishment is, it's a state where we're maintaining states. The whole invention is about having two endpoints where one of the endpoints' IP address might change over time. But we want to be able to maintain that connection. We want to have persistence in that connection. So we need some mechanism other than the underlying IP address where we can maintain state over time.
The way I've been reading the board's decision is that they said the examiner's reliance on anticipation for this very claim element was not sufficient. It wasn't necessarily so, but they concluded that it would have been obvious to a person of ordinary art in the art to at least have this as an obvious variation. Am I misunderstanding?
No, you're right. But then they don't say anything about how it would be obvious. All they say is there is nothing precludes. There are three statements that the board, three times the board answered a question about what the record shows by saying what the record does not forbid. On whether a peer name is a service name, nothing precludes it at Appendix 28. On whether the establishment limitation requires the name to be used, the claim does not necessarily require it at Appendix 14. And whether a skilled artisan would make the modification, no obvious evidence showed it would be beyond their skill at Appendix 13 to 14.
I want to make sure you know that you're well into your rebuttal time.
I understood. But absence of preclusion is not substantial evidence. All they point to is that it's precluded, but don't say why. So I will hold the rest of my time.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Amin, when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Unless the court has a different preference, I'll start with claim construction. And I think that, as a preface, that it's our position that the board faithfully applied the construction that was put forth in the IPR decision. And Appendix 6, as my colleague noted, the board recited that very construction. And on the next page, the board noted that the examiner faithfully applied that construction to require all instances of the remote service name to be the same thing. I think my colleague also refers to the support limitation, that to support the establishment of the connection. And that limitation was not construed by the board in the IPR denial. The IPR denial was based on this antecedent basis between the two and the recitations of the service name.
What is your response to the argument that, yes, the board recited the right construction, but then on pages A14 to 15, when it actually discussed that construction and applied it, it gave a broader construction?
So, I disagree with that argument for two reasons. I think on appendix, where the board applies that construction is appendix 6 and appendix 7. The board there recognizes that the examiner correctly applied the construction. That is to say that the board recognized that the examiner applied the same service name to each limitation. That was the construction before the board and the IPR. The board and the IPR didn't construe support establishment of the connection.
Oh, I see.
So what counsel's referring to as kind of gutting the limitation, that's on appendix 14 and 15. That's not something the board considered in rendering its decision on the denial.
The IPR board.
Yes, I'm sorry, the IPR board, my apologies. And so at appendix 14 and 15, The board is applying the support the establishment of the connection limitation. And in that, the board recognizes that finding a peer is a key initial step in establishing the connection. And here we're left with what appears to be broad functional claim language that they had the opportunity to amend to make more concrete in view of the board's decision here. And you know, they say that like support has to mean something, but they haven't told us anything about the outer bounds of support. They haven't told us why obtaining the information necessary to establish the connection does not constitute supporting the establishment of a connection.
Should we read what the re-exam board is saying at 14 and 15 about support as claim construction that we review de novo, or is it something else?
No, I think, Your Honor, I think that's understanding the teachings of Traversat, which the court would review under substantial evidence. So the question is, does Traversat teach supporting the establishment of connection? And that is a question that this court would review for substantial evidence. And we think that substantial evidence is clearly shown here, where Traversat, by sending this discovery message to 232, my apologies, obtains the information that it needs to establish a connection with the remote peer. It obtains that pipe advertisement, which is necessary to establish a connection to the remote peer. So in our view, the board both faithfully applied the construction that was set forth in the IPR decision and correctly applied the support language in Claim 1, Representative Claim 1 before this court.
What about the argument that the board failed to articulate its obviousness analysis with sufficient, you know, detail and clarity?
Sure. So I think my colleague suggests that there wasn't much analysis in terms of...
As one sentence.
Right. Yeah. But so I think that the board's analysis is much more than one sentence. It starts at Appendix 12 and it goes through Appendix 15.
I think the argument is that there is no reason why a person of ordinary skill in the art would do this. Right. No motivation. Where's the motivation?
The motivation is, as the board found on Appendix 13, the motivation is in Traversat itself. Traversat suggests adding the remote peer name to the discovery message 232. The board cites, at I guess, the second full paragraph in Appendix 13, the board cites two passages in Traversat that disclose discovery using the peer name itself. And so in those passages, Traversat is at least suggesting that when you send this discovery message to 232, it would be a good idea to add the peer name. And we don't have any contrary evidence in the record. So I think that the board clearly articulated the prima facie case here of obviousness, both with all the limitations being taught and a motivation to modify Traversat such that it meets the claim limitations.
So it's not just the lack of contrary evidence, although the board did point that out.
Right.
We do have to find some affirmative evidence for what the board found, and you've pointed us to what you think is there.
Yes, absolutely. It's two passages the board found, column 52 and column 45. Both passages disclose the use of the service name in discovering the remote peer and disclose why you would do so. The point being that if you include the name in there, it's easier to provide the search results back to you. If you don't put the peer name in there, you're going to get a lot of search results, many of which may not be useful to you. So if you put the peer name in there, you're only going to get the advertisements that you really want.
Could I turn your attention to the due process point quickly? And I understand your argument about a due process objection has to live or die by the stated process. I just want to understand the functional difference in what you're arguing was outside of process and what would have been procedurally proper to reopen the prosecution. So under Section 4150, a patent holder can reopen a prosecution through amendment of a rejected claim. Is that right? So an amendment of a claim that was rejected could involve maybe adding a new limitation that arguably distinguishes the prior art.
Yes.
And then what happened here is that the patent holder expressly said, we're not amending, and they added a new claim. It would be possible for that new claim to just restate one of the canceled claims with an additional limitation, correct?
Correct, yeah.
And so functionally, would that, even though procedurally it might be different than an amendment, functionally it would be putting in a proposed claim of the same narrow scope before the appropriate official for reexamination, right?
Right. So,
why is one a proper procedure and one not proper procedure?
So if I can answer that in two parts, Your Honor. First, in our view, there isn't a due process concern here because they had notice of the rejection and they had the opportunity to make their case before a disinterested decision maker. So whether that's the board or whether it's the examiner, they had the opportunity. They had both notice and the opportunity to be heard. So in our view, there isn't a due process consideration. It's a question of how do you get to finality before the agency. And that, we think, is within the agency's discretion on how to kind of route different paths before the agency. And here, in terms of would it have made a functional difference to cancel the entire claim and add a new claim as opposed to amending the current claim, I agree there's not much of a difference there, but they didn't do either one of those two things. They kept that claim in.
Right. No, and I'm really not asking you to justify why you should win on the process point. We can read the regulation and apply it. I'm just kind of asking, what's the why behind the regulation? If it's excluding something that's functionally the same as what is possible.
So I think the agency is trying to balance two competing concerns. On the one hand, we're trying to reach finality in the most efficient way possible. On the other hand, we're trying to make sure that when new issues arise based on new rejection, the applicant in appropriate circumstances has the ability to go back before the examiner. And so in between those two,
Can I just interrupt for a second? And also when they go back before the examiner, they're not gonna have the examiner just hearing the same thing the board would have heard. I mean, what I'm trying to say is that you don't want the examiner without new evidence or new claims reviewing the board's decision, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. So the examiner does not have the authority to go back and look at what the board did. What the board did is binding upon the examiner. And so there's no reason to so on the one hand of the spectrum, there's no reason to send it back to the examiner if the examiner does not have the ability to kind of go back and reconsider the kind of the obviousness arguments. And so the reason why that regulation is there is that, yes, if you put a new issue or you put new evidence before into the proceeding that wasn't before the board, then it might make sense to go back to the examiner. But if you don't do that, then there's no reason to send it back to the examiner who doesn't have the authority to go back on what the board did.
But the other gateway to going back is not just new evidence, but an amendment, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Unless the court has any other questions, we'd urge the court to affirm. Thank you.
Your Honors, I want to address that last point, the due process point first. You're absolutely right. It is either or, evidence or amendment, and only after WSOU already provided an amendment did the re-exam come back, CRU come back and say, no, the amendment must include, in order to present new claims, substitute claims, you must cancel original claims.
That's provided in the regulation and in the MPEP interpretation of the regulation. Isn't that right?
So the regulation itself only says in disjunctive form, amendment or evidence.
It's amendment of the rejected claims.
Correct.
Or new
correct.
Evidence.
Correct.
Right? So it's amendment of the rejected claims, not just amendment, meaning add new claims, keep the rejected claims in the case.
Although right? But if we look at traditional patent prosecution, an amendment could involve adding new claims that incorporate, and this is exactly what WSOU did. They added new claims that incorporated the subject matter of the rejected claims, presented those as additional.
You didn't cancel the rejected claims, right?
Did not cancel the original claims at that point. But if they had been reviewed and we had been given the opportunity, we could have done that during the prosecution of those claims. I also want to go back on the claim construction and merits issue. They really are one and the same. And if we look at that appendix 14 and 15, yes, the board said that they were adopting. But if you go back to what the director says at 13 about support evidence, all they said was discovery. It would have been obvious to add the name into the discovery protocol. Again, that doesn't reach the gap to get to establishment. All it does is says, yeah, maybe we can include the name because Traversat says it's obvious, but Traversat also explicitly says, Every establishment is based on an identifier and not a name. Every construct has both an optional name and a required identifier that must be used to establish that connection in Traverse App.
Mr. Gregory, you're out of time. Do you want to wrap it up?
Yes, please. Thank you very much. Really appreciate your time in hearing this argument. And if you don't have any other questions.
We thank the parties. The case will be submitted.